Hey, welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast. My name is Pete Fletcher, and joining me as usual is my good friend, Mr. John Nicholson. John, how you doing, buddy?
Good. I'm going into day two of Rodeo Cook-Off Barbecue of three. So I think my strategy of preparation, you know, hydration and lots of salad for the week and lead up is going to carry me through. But I can already feel my dancing shoes are getting a little sore. So I'm going to do some proactive maintenance on my feet, you know, and get ready for tonight.
Yeah. Yeah. And for those that are not aware, so John, you live in Houston, Texas. They have an annual rodeo that essentially in the very beginning of the rodeo kicks off with a ton of food and dancing. Am I correct?
Yeah. And other tomfoolery. So I think there's going to be me and 30,000 of my friends out there tonight. Should be fun.
Nice, nice, nice. Now, previous years, you actually worked the rodeo, right? Didn't you like do something?
I think yeah, I was just committee man.
Just a ploy to get free food and beer or?
It gets you free concert tickets also. So, you know,
and it's nice.
Scholarships. They've donated like $600 million to charity. So it's a good cause. You know, the Nicholson tries to give back on occasion. So
I like it. Much respect. Last question before we bring on our awesome special guest. Rodeo, do you have the same pre-preparation regimen as you do for Barcelona? Because I know when you go to Barcelona, there's like a, you know, an overindulgence of like sodium, you know, and all of
that. Barcelona's more about hydration. I think rodeo is more you got to get your like lean protein and fiber in earlier in the week just because you're going to be eating a fattier cuts of meat, frankly, in some ways. I mean, you can kind of blend it with the tapas. But yeah, it's just the salt is really where I feel like Barcelona stands out.
I like it. All right.
Enough food talk.
You've got this completely planned. I'm excited. Looking forward to hearing the report after rodeo. But now on to more important things. Our special guest of the week, Mr. William Lamb. William, welcome to Virtually Speaking Live.
Hey, thanks for having me again. Happy Friday.
Yeah, man. Happy Friday to you. William, big question here. Rodeo, are you a barbecue guy or...
Yeah, the eating barbecue, but not the rodeo. Maybe watching it, probably.
Yeah. Okay. And inquiring minds want to know: North Carolina barbecue, Texas barbecue. Is there a preference?
Not going there. I'll eat all kinds of barbecues. How about that?
I like it. I like it. You're a man of the people. I love it. So yeah, for those listening, this is being streamed live on YouTube, on LinkedIn, and on X or Twitter. So yeah, feel free to jump in, say hello, say hi to William. We're going to be entertaining your questions and comments. And most importantly, though, yeah, we're going to be picking this guy's brain. He's been doing a lot of really cool stuff lately, as usual. And I wanted to ask him a couple of questions about some of the stuff that he's been writing. So with that, William, let's start with the fact. And if you don't know, obviously, William's blog is williamlamb.com. If you're in the VMware community, you've probably spent half your career on this website. But so you've been doing a lot of cool stuff with automating. And one of the things I noticed that you did recently, is you've been playing with Power VCF. So maybe you can tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I've been spending a lot of time just kind of updating some of my deployment scripts. I've built these over the years. Makes it really easy for anybody to kind of deploy various parts of the VMware software stack, you know, from basic vSphere, NSX, vSAN, vCenter, and even some of our Aria products. And it was actually recently one of our internal engineering teams was asking, if the VCF script that I had written, which kind of deploys a set of nested ESXi VMs and then sets up Cloud Builder and then stands all that up and provisions a basic management cluster, if it supported the latest release of 5.1, which we announced, I think, late last year. And I actually hadn't time to touch that, so I figured that this would be a good opportunity to kind of update some of the scripts, kind of play around with it, and it gave me an opportunity to just make it easier for folks to use. And so I had a couple of adjustments over the last couple of weeks. The first one was really taking the core VCF automation lab script and make it support the latest 5.1 release, which supports vSphere 8.0u2, and kind of streamline the automation so it's kind of end-to-end. And one of the things I wanted to take a look at, it was like, you know, could I take it further and not only automate the stand-up of the management domain, which includes vCenter, vSAN, NSX, and all those components, but could I also set up the workload domain? Because I saw a lot of users were actually manually adjusting the script and commenting out certain sections. So I was like, oh, you know, maybe this is a good opportunity to go take a look at what it would take to automate the workload domain. And we have some good folks within our team that, you know, develop Power VCF, which uses the SCDC manager APIs, and basically have a bunch of really useful PowerShell wrapper commandlet functions that consumes the APIs. And so I basically kind of put that together and had a supplemental script where you can specify n number of nested ESXi VM hosts, and you can specify configuration in terms of resources. And it will actually go create this thing called the commission file. And anybody that's used VMware Cloud Foundation understands that you'll deploy your ESX host, whether it's physical or virtual, commission them into SCDC manager, and then go ahead and deploy the end-to-end workload domain. And so what I've done is I basically connected all those scripts together, produced the file, and with a couple of commands, it will go and deploy the full workload domain. So now you've got your management domain, your workload domain. And this is really useful for like learning purposes. I was actually wanting to play with some of the APIs. And so again, this is a good way for me to quickly stand up this infrastructure in a couple of hours time. And for anybody that just wants to get hands-on.
Yeah, I haven't played with the Power VCF yet. Is that similar to Power CLI? Like, obviously, their commands are specific to VCF, but same.
Yeah, very similar. You know, the team have basically put together these higher level commandlets that build on top of the SCDC Manager REST API. It just makes it easier for you, so you don't really need to understand the underlying APIs, things from like host operations, deploying some of the ARIA products. And the nice thing about it is it's fully open source. In fact, I found a couple of areas where we can make some improvements on, filed some bugs on GitHub, and the team has already resolved it, right? So one of the cool things where it's actually fully open source versus something like Power CLI, which is still closed source.
Yeah, you don't have to open an SR and then someone go open a PR and it kind of filter through internal processes. You can open direct. In terms of the resources required, since this is nested, what is kind of the minimum to get that management cluster, and what are kind of the minimum, I guess, for each workload domain?
I documented in the GitHub repository. I don't recall offhand. In 5.1, we do need a little bit more resources just because of the components that we're deploying. But it's pretty flexible, right? And so if you don't want to deploy a workload domain in some scenario, like for me, I was actually just playing with the SCDC manager APIs. So I just needed the management domain, so the resources aren't as much. If you want to deploy the workload domain, for those that are not familiar with the architecture, all of the management components, so vCenter, NSX, all of those are going to be deployed into your management cluster, right? So if you have a smaller management workload management domain, you may not be able to run the workload domain management components. And so you may need a little bit more resources. So it just depends kind of what you're using. But I do give a couple of examples. And there are a bunch of folks who've been using these scripts and actually have adjusted some of the minimums in terms of what is the least amount of resources that you need to deploy, which is always, you know, useful for home lab purposes, right? And if you really want to push the boundaries, you know, I've done some physical VCF deployments where we're able to significantly reduce the amount of resources. Don't want to do this in production, but you can reduce the number of NSX managers, reduce some of the sizes of the appliances. So if you really want to trim it down, there's also a couple of other articles I have on my blog that allows you to kind of play with that as well.
Yeah, I've seen this stuff on trying to get VCF, get like a management workload skinny down to like 96 or smaller amounts so you can actually get that onto one host, goes well into your other blog series posts about, you know, testing out every different kind of potential host of that. And I love these kind of more exotic, weird, you know, non-symmetric DEMs and things for getting more stuff in.
And the funny thing about the VCF thing, just before I forget, John, it was that last year I was able to get a full management workload domain running on an Intel NUC with just 64 gigs of memory. So I wanted to kind of see how far we can, you know, push the boundaries. And so this is a fully functional management domain.
Yeah, you're not getting 100 gig on that overlay, but that's
right.
That's wild.
Yeah, and that's with 64. That's with 64 gigs. And I think you still have a little bit left to run a handful of actual workload VMs. So it just kind of shows you like, hey, with a little bit more memory. And as you rightfully said, there are other kits out there with these 96 gigs of memory. So it's using these non-binary SODIMM modules. So now you can get up to 48 gigs for a single DIMM. So now you got an extra 32 gigs of memory to actually do some other things. And then I have a similar blog post that takes a secondary Intel NUC and runs a workload domain. So the point here is that you can certainly get away with, again, playing with our software with, you know, constrained environments. But obviously, if you have more resources, larger hosts, especially using, you know, projects like Holodeck, where you're able to kind of deploy a fully functional, isolated VCF environment, management, workload domain, AD, like the whole shebang. So like if you want just like one physical host and you don't have any existing vSphere infrastructure, that's a really cool way to kind of get VCF up and running, and you get all of the production-like qualities from the solution itself.
Yeah, Holodeck's crazy. I know you had a hand on that early on. Weren't you part of the folks that, like, I think this started from you guys just automating the whole thing in Nested Labs
Yeah, exactly. I think they built it. The team also did some really, really cool stuff. You know, I see some of the stuff that they've used to further optimize, but the team definitely did some really cool stuff that I wasn't even aware of when I took a look at it. But yeah, that definitely, you know, throw one out for the Holodeck. If you have like just one single physical host, you just install vanilla ESXi and then everything is handled automatically for you. Whereas if you look at some of the scripts I've written, they're more catered to folks who already have some type of a vSphere environment, and they don't want to basically start from scratch, right? And so multiple ways of skinning the cat. And again, we have many different ways of, you know, playing with the software itself.
I like these tools that fundamentally at their core kind of remind me a lot of some of our internal engineering, just testing tools, but have evolved and are kind of polished enough and useful enough, you know, outside of our own, you know, QAT purposes and things, sneaking out there, so to speak, in the wild and letting others kind of get to take advantage of these automation tools. It's interesting seeing kind of the crossover bleed of that availability.
Yeah, I also saw you take advantage of some of the notifications, right? So like when you deploy some of these workload domains, just, you know, setting up notifications to let you know when it's done, if there's any errors and all that stuff. So it's you've definitely been spending some time inside of that module. But the thing I really wanted to talk to you about, there was another blog you wrote. Let me see if I can get to it over here, under VMware Cloud Foundation on williamlam.com. And I think here we go. This one here, this updated inventory and calculator scripts for counting cores, TIBs, TIBibytes, for VMware Cloud Foundation and VMware vSphere Foundation. So I want to talk about the scripts, but before we do, maybe we can back up and talk a little bit about, the license, sort of the new offerings that VMware has released and sort of why this presented the need for these scripts.
Yeah, so as many of you probably know, you know, we've did a massive consolidation of all of our different offers. And so today we kind of have four main offers. You know, two of the primary ones is our VMware vSphere Foundation, as well as our VMware Cloud Foundation. And these are really different offers from a perspective that there's a lot more components that's actually now included, which is really cool to see. And because there are some changes in terms of pricing, packaging, and just sort of how things are licensed, one of the challenges that I saw from a lot of folks was sort of like, well, how do I take a look at my existing infrastructure? How do I inventory that? And we did this a couple years back with the launch of things like vSphere Plus, VCF Plus, right? Going from a CPU socket to core-based thing, which started back in 2019. We're really behind on this space, to be honest, right? We are sort of trailing a lot of the industry players in terms of how we're doing this licensing.
Yeah.
And part of this was just sort of like, how do we help our customers understand what they've got? There's a lot of customers just don't realize like how much their infrastructure has grown. You have different types of hardware systems. And so part of it was sort of, how do I inventory what I've got? And what does it look like for these different offers? And just being able to aggregate that up and give that visibility to the user so that they know what they've got, but also sort of, hey, if I wanted to look at VVF or VCF, what is that going to look like from a transition standpoint? And then it was also a little bit complex because we're also providing a certain amount of GIBs and TIBs in terms of vSAN storage, which is a really nice touch, I would say, from the PNP teams in terms of a certain amount of cores, and especially designed for folks who've never got to play with vSAN, right? I think all of us have gotten the benefits of vSAN over the years from the early days, but there's still a lot of customers that haven't had a chance to play with vSAN, right? And you know, historically, you would have to basically buy vSAN to be able to play with it. And so I thought this was a nice touch that we started to include some of this capacity basically as a free trial. And in certain cases, you, depending on your needs, you may be able to get away with just the capacity that you're entitled to as you look at these new offers.
Yeah, that is actually a fully support. It's kind of weird because we were initially wanting to call it a trial. We're like, it's not a trial. We will support it. It is production. So it's just, it is a small capacity amount.
Yeah. I mean, if you've never played with it before, you know, it is sort of a trial from that perspective. But yeah, we fully support it. You'll be able to call into support and you know, we'll, the products that enable that, you know, we'll have an update that will be coming out fairly fairly shortly that will basically give you that entitlement. And so if you're a customer today, you can certainly buy into that and you can start to use some of the tools that we'll talk about today to help you sort of calculate what you've got, what you're entitled to, how much you might need. And again, these tools just make it easy for folks to not have to do math. I don't like doing math. And even some of the questions I was trying to help the field, I'm reading the question. I'm like, do I fully understand the P&P? And so it was nice to kind of work with the different parts of the team. And, you know, this is probably the most amount of, you know, P&P I've got exposed to kind of understand like, okay, these are all the different policies. How do I codify that into some of these scripts to make it super simple, you know, whether it's for a customer to understand what they need or want, to helping some of our sales folks to help create some of these quotes so that we can easily transact with our customers.
William Lamb takes a look at P&P and says, I can automate that.
This is all just Excel, right? This is, yeah. The entire P2P department, it's three Excel sheets stacked on top of each other is what I always thought. But no, there's a lot of hard math there. I do like looking at the bundle just, you know, anecdotally. You know, the first thing I noticed was also that the Foundation Edition, you know, basically everyone who's moving from Enterprise Plus to that will get vRealize Operations. And one kind of passion I've had lately is efficiency on environments. And as you're running the script, you may look at this and go, wow, this is a lot of cores. I don't remember having all this. Look at your utilization rates. Make sure, you know, go do a VOA, get a trial of VROPS in, you know, before you maybe move. But look at your actual utilization and make sure you're using all of the, you know, DRS, all the memory compaction features, you know, you're properly using CPU. You're not using DRS groups as folders and so forth. I think, you know, running this collection tool, it's a great opportunity to not only take inventory of what assets you have, but also take a reevaluation of your utilization and also maybe even look at some of the hosts in your environment and say, wait, these are Broadwell, these are Skylake. Why am I still running these? Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it's time to, you know, call Lenovo or someone, get a new host in.
Yeah. So before we go to the demo, because I want to see this in action and I want to see how people can actually take advantage of this themselves. But it was funny when we first started talking about the new licensing and Tibibytes, one of the very first questions I saw in our first briefing, there were multiple people asking, what is a Tibibyte? So maybe we can talk a little bit about that. Like, why are we not using gigabytes?
Yeah, no, that's a good one. And then to be honest, I had to look that up myself too when we first got started a few years back. I was like, what is this? I always thought it was gigabytes. And you know, it's interesting. I think this has probably been in the storage industry for quite some time. There's probably some debate around it, and it's one of those trade off things, right? Of like simplicity versus accuracy. And you know, I guess at some point, you know, it was just easier. You know, human beings like to count by powers of tens, right? And so you look at a typical gigabyte, the unit of measurement would be like 1,000, right? For if we're looking at gigabytes, from a computer standpoint, computer accuracy standpoint, you know, it's powers of two, so it's 1024. And I'm sure there's been some, you know, sales aspect of storage that's been kind of mucking with that a little bit.
Sure.
And the interesting thing, as I was kind of writing these scripts, you know, I actually ended up learning some things about our platform too, is that from an API and implementation standpoint, we actually have been doing Gibbs since day one.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, just like everybody else, just for simplicity and probably how you grew up into this world of, you know, getting exposed to this information, our UI actually renders a lot of the stuff in gigabytes. So if you actually do the math and you look at the numbers, they do look a little bit funky from that standpoint. So when I was automating this, it was like, oh, the UI is actually showing gigabytes, but the underlying API is actually Gibbs or Tibs. And so there's this kind of weird mashup of like, okay, these numbers don't always line up. And it was only until talking to product management and engineering. And I don't think we're going to change it necessarily because I think it'd just be too disruptive.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, if you're used to something, it changes. And then obviously the APIs, we wouldn't want to change that. And so kind of status quo, right? But yeah, that's really the difference between Gibbs and Tibs.
There actually is a blog that I think Glenn Sizemore put out that explained the differences, because when you go into VMC on AWS, because of some AWS nomenclature and how they reported it was different in the UI, and people were asking that question. I think the actual decision dates back like 20 years ago or something, when we were primarily virtualizing Windows and Microsoft had gone one path and how they reported it, which may not have, I guess, been the most scientifically accurate. But we didn't want Windows admins yelling at us back with, you know, GSX server or something. And we've just kind of been rolling it forward, I think, forward. But yeah, it's always fun uncovering, you know, math arguments, which are my favorite kind of arguments.
That's right. Yeah. And these numbers matter, right? I mean, they're not insignificant. And obviously, this will matter in terms of what you're entitled to, how much capacity you need. And so we want to make sure that this is all accurate, but it is certainly important to kind of understand what that is. So yeah.
Very nice. Well, yeah, let's see this thing in action, and let's also give us a little guidance for those that are not exactly sure what you're doing. Like John.
Okay. So yeah. So I'll go through two demos. All I'm doing is just basically log into my vCenter server. So the first demo or the first script is kind of what I would consider your brownfield. You've got an existing vSphere with the vCenter environment. And what the script or PowerShell module is going to do is basically collect that inventory. And it's going to look at your hosts for clusters or even standalone hosts that are managed by vCenter server, and then go and collect the number of host sockets, CPU cores, and then based on the deployment type, whether it's a VVF or VSF, because there's different policies in that, it will calculate, you know, what you've got, what you're entitled to, and how much you need, and then kind of aggregate that as a whole for you. So you can see that on a per cluster basis, and you can see that in the total aggregation. And there's a couple of options of using the script, meaning I can connect to the entire vCenter server and it's going to collect all hosts, all clusters, or I can target a very specific cluster. And I've had some users ask for more granularity. It's like, hey, I'm only interested in this particular cluster. You can add in the parameter for called cluster name, and it'll go and basically zoom in and give you that information. This is using PowerShell CLI. So as a prerequisite, you'll want to have PowerShell Core. Nice thing about PowerShell Core and PowerShell for quite some time is it's multi-platform. So it can be Windows, Mac, or Linux. So download that using your favorite tool of choice, or just kind of go into Microsoft.com. Grab the latest version of PowerShell CLI. That always gives you performance benefits. And then you go in and go to the KB article, and I think you guys will link to the two KB articles. And in this first module, it's called the Foundation Core and TIB Usage PowerShell module. So what you'll do is you'll just go ahead and run an import command. And what that does is basically just brings this module into the code path. And so you have access to the function that we're about to use, which is this git foundation core usage, right? So what you'll do is you'll connect to your vCenter server, and you can do this across n number of vCenter servers. And for some folks that want to fully automate it, you can just kind of write a small little for loop that connects, runs this. And then the nice thing about the script is it also has console output, but it also allows you to output the results in a XLS file. So you can take that, import that into Excel and do further manipulation. And then for folks who really want to get a better understanding of their infrastructure, we also have this VMware value model system that you can engage with your account team, where they can actually help you take a look at what you've got and even do some additional advanced sizing capabilities by looking at what you're using today. What are the deployment models that you're going for, especially some of the hardware refreshes that John was mentioning. Sometimes you may just want to get a secondary set of eyes. And so we do have services around that. And I believe it's free, actually. So you just need to engage with your account team and they can take that information, whether it's actually from this script or even things from like RVTool, Live Optics, or other mechanisms where you're able to kind of share, here's what my infrastructure looks like. And so we go ahead and specify the function. And then I specify the deployment type. And the deployment type, there's like sort of two options, right? And the reason you kind of need to choose here is that we don't know which of the two offers you're interested in. So yeah. Obviously we have our VMware vSphere Foundation and we have our VMware Cloud Foundation. So depending on which SKU you're interested in, or if you want to see results for both, you would just kind of toggle the parameter. So that's why we were asking users to basically specify, because we don't know which of the offers you're interested in. And then here, since I'm not specifying a particular cluster, it's just going to go and query all hosts within the cluster. I'm actually borrowing an environment from our good friend, Frank Deniman. So you can see, this is actually one of his machine learning clusters. Shh, don't tell him. And it produces two tables for you, right? So you can see that, hey, it connected, works pretty quickly. And it's producing results for vSphere, the VMware vSphere Foundation SKU. And here what you'll see is it has a breakdown of clusters. So if you have hosts that are not in a cluster, so basically standalone hosts, this field will be empty. But you can see that I've got four hosts in this cluster called ML cluster. Each of these hosts are nicely uniform. But of course, if they're not, we'll also handle the situations. And we can see that each of these hosts are two sockets, so two physical CPU processors. Each of these processors has 20 cores. And then this final column here simply just tallies from a compute standpoint, how many of those licenses would you need? And all of this, there's a bunch of math behind it to calculate sort of the minimum from a commercing standpoint. And any other entitlement that you might get out. So rather than having to go through all that, understand it from the KV perspective, which is what it outlines, by using the script, it's looking at your specific environment and it gives you your specific sort of required license count. So if I just purely looked at these hosts, I would need to have 40 of these VVF licenses to be properly entitled across these processors.
So that factor the other 16 core minimum and all that goes into that.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. So you don't need to really think about that, right? And that's really something that you kind of need to do. And imagine you have to do that for each host. And it's like, okay, these hosts have low core usage, high core. So it just gets complex, right? And then the other thing is that this bottom table will only get rendered if we detect that you've got vSAN enabled today. So if you see any information down here, because I have had some users say, I'm seeing vSAN here, but I'm not using vSAN. And it's like they probably have enabled it at some point, or maybe it wasn't fully configured. But if the hosts are basically configured for vSAN, we will go ahead and then take a look at that. And now vSAN licensing is done on a per vSphere cluster. So here we don't break it down by individual hosts. And so this is fully aggregating this. Now Frank is doing vSAN in his environment. So we have the same cluster, same number of hosts. Now we tally up the number of sockets, the total number of cores. And then here is a collection, aggregation of the number of compute cores, you know, based on this environment. So it matches this 160, right? So we're just placing that here. And the reason we're outputting this here is that for VVF, as a VVF customer, you get some amount of vSAN capacity. So for every core of VVF, you get 100 GIBs of vSAN capacity that's entitled to you automatically, right? And so for you to get this entitlement, you obviously have to use these cores and deploy a vSAN cluster. So assuming you were going to take this ML cluster and you're going to deploy full vSAN capacity, then what we do is we take this number of cores that you're entitled to from what we got earlier, and then we all basically multiply that by 100 GIBs. And then we also standardize it against TIBS, because ultimately when you go and purchase additional capacity from a storage perspective, it's going to be sold in TIBS. So we just want to make it normalize it from that metric standpoint. So with the 160 multiplied by 100 GIBs, converted to TIBS, you're basically allocated to roughly about 15.6 TIBS of capacity. Just simply by using VVF, you get that capacity automatically for free. And then this other, the second to last column here looks at the actual capacity that you're using. And this is actually raw capacity. So if you're looking at vSAN OSA, we simply look at your capacity drives. We do not look at your caching drives. And then for something like ESA, we obviously look at all the devices and calculate that raw capacity. So you can see here that you're allocated 15 TIBs and you're requiring 20. Now, due to licensing, we typically will round up to the nearest the whole number. So you can see at the very end of this, I would need to purchase additional 21 TIBs of capacity to kind of meet the needs of this particular cluster. And then at the very end here, we basically just tallied up. This is a simple example. We've got, you know, one cluster, four sets of hosts. And so the tally is pretty simple. But if I got multiple cluster, multiple set of hosts, and you'll be able to see this on a per cluster basis for vSAN, per host for the compute. And then obviously this will fully tally that up for you at the very end.
No, I like that. I guess some other questions here. If I wanted to change the model to VCF, I would go rerun it, I guess, within that VCF mode would be basically the model.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. So, you're actually exactly right. So if I wanted to do VCF, I go ahead and rerun that and it goes and does a collection. And really the biggest difference here is really going to be in that entitlement, right? So if you're purchasing VCF, you can see that from the compute standpoint, exact same, right? Still 40 license counts for each of those, a total of 160. But the nice thing about the VCF offer, which is different from VVF, is that instead of getting entitled of 100 GIBs, you're for every single VCF core that you'll plan to use for vSAN, you're now entitled to one TIB, or yeah, one TIB.
So I see my requirements negative 139. So yeah, I've got.
That's right.
It's time to go buy some drives, Frank. Let's store some stuff.
Exactly. And the nice thing, and the other useful thing to also be aware of is that when you're doing the VCF entitlement, not only are you entitled to a larger number of TIBs, you can actually aggregate that across your single VCF instance. And I know that there's been some confusion because I think maybe some terminology of like VCF environment. It's really a VCF instance, which really maps to an SDDC manager and the number of management and workload domains. And so now you don't have to actually have each cluster supplying the right amount of TIBs. You can have some storage heavy clusters versus low level clusters or even no storage clusters. And so this really plays into the benefits of things like HCI mesh, vSAN max, whereas before you kind of decide what type of an architecture. Here it's like, if you've got the infrastructure, you've got the needs, you can use OSA, ESA. We really don't care anymore, which I really like, because you don't have to think about the feature sets. We're going to continue to innovate and add capabilities, and you deploy what makes sense for you. So from a
there's no standard advanced enterprise and plus. It's all it's just vSAN advanced enterprise.
It's just vSAN exactly. So you get all the bells and whistles, and you get to decide how you want to allocate that, right? And so if I had a more complex example, I might have multiple clusters with different types of needs and capacity. And what it's going to do is that on a per cluster basis, you'll see either zero, meaning you don't need any additional add-on, meaning that whatever we've entitled you to, your needs basically are met by that entitlement. So you don't need to purchase anything additionally. If you see a positive integer, it means that you need to purchase additional TIBs to kind of meet your requirements. And then if you see a negative value, it's saying that you're in excess, right? So just by simply looking at VCF, because of the 160 cores, you're entitled to 160 TIBs. And we can see that in this particular environment, we only have 20 TIBs of raw capacity. So it's a fairly small cluster, but now I've got an extra 139 that I can use for anything else. And again, you can see that at the very end. And at the end of the day, it just makes it very easy for somebody to look at their environment, quickly inventory to see what they've got, because sometimes these core counts, they can decide like, hey, maybe it's time for a refresh of hardware to better have better consolidation ratios, and then kind of get this full holistic inventory view. And again, I can easily output this into a spreadsheet, and then you can kind of do some further manipulations with it.
So I could actually change my hats and put on my architect hat here and see that extra capacity and say, you know what, I'm going to go build a big storage cluster. In fact, I'm just going to have a whole storage workload domain over here full of vSAN max and use that capacity, then go feed some other cluster, some other workload domain within that SCDC instance. So that's pretty cool. You know, nice. Then it's that's just right. a matter yeah. of, yeah, how much farther you want to, you know, take this in terms of this. I'm already thinking quietly in the background, and since this is live, I won't annoy William by walking through them all, but I'm already thinking of like five feature requests I have for this, but this is awesome. Thank you, William.
Yeah. So this is great, but we also have a lot of folks that may not be able to run this particular script for a number of reasons. And in some cases, they're also planning for future deployments. And so after we kind of made these announcements last year, I started to see a lot of questions like, hey, if I got this particular configuration, what would the licensing look like, right? And the unfortunate part is that you can write these questions in such a way that they're all asking the same thing, but it's really hard to decipher. And so I ended up finding myself like, oh, was it this? Which entitlement do I need to do? And so it ultimately led me to think that, you know, we should also have sort of like a, what I would call a kind of like a greenfield script. It doesn't connect to your infrastructure. And you can even use this to size out your existing infrastructure. Like I said, some users may not be able to run a script, even if it's coming from VMware. And so the second script is sort of a calculator tool. And again, it has a very simple function, same sets of formulas. But the nice part about this is that we're able to take in a sample file, and it's just a basic CSV file. So you give it an arbitrary cluster name, so you can name this anything you want. You specify the number of hosts, number of sockets, cores per socket, whether or not the cluster is going to be vSAN enabled or not. So if you want to calculate sort of what is my vSAN entitlement, and then what is the total raw vSAN storage that you require in TIBS, right? Really, really simple. And this kind of allows you to play what-if scenarios. So again, this is a basic PowerShell script. So there's no PowerCLI dependencies. You just need PowerShell core. We provide a sample file as part of the KB article. So you can go download this and download the calculator. And it works exactly the same as before. So I'm just going to run this dot command, which basically sources the function. And then what we'll do is we'll get this input file. So I've got that input that I showed you earlier. And then we can do the exact same thing. I specify my deployment type. And you can see this is instantaneously, right? Because all it's doing is reading the CSV file and then processing it, right? Mm-hmm. Math, yeah. So again, so it's math, but it takes into account, again, all the different PMP policies for both VVF as well as VCF, adds in the entitlement. So here we have a more complex and probably more realistic example where I've got n number of clusters. They've got different host configuration, different CPU sockets, different cores per sockets, and then we'll automatically tally up the number of foundation licenses for each of those clusters and the total aggregation of hosts. And because of all these clusters, I want to use vSAN, and they've all got different required TIP capacity. When you look down at the bottom part of it, I basically render the exact same information. We still show the number of cores and then the entitlement here. So for VVF, again, it's 100 gigs for every VVF core. So you can see for 144 cores, I'm going to get roughly about 14-ish TIBs. And then in that CSV file, I also define what is the raw capacity I'm looking to provide in each of these clusters. So these are the numbers you see here. And you can see in a couple of these examples, I'm entitled to 14. I only need about 13.9. So in this case, I'm good for that particular cluster. I don't need any additional add-ons, right? And in these cases, I do need to have some add-ons. And so again, we fully add that up at the very end. So I need about 2,000 cores for VVF for compute. And I need about 1952 in terms of the vSAN add-ons to be full compliance for across these hosts.
Looking at this example, when you're getting to be basically almost a one-to-one of how many add-ons you need to add per core, you probably should just be looking at VCF because the 1 terabyte entitlement.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And so this allows you to kind of play those what-if scenarios, right? Both with your existing infrastructure, if you want to just manually input those values, or from a planning perspective of like, hey, I'm concerned these types of hosts, these configuration, these requirements, what really makes the most sense for me from a licensing standpoint and ultimately the capabilities, right? Because in VVF, one thing to understand is that you're not able to aggregate. So if you've got a cluster that has a lot of high core counts, you're not going to be able to take that entitlement of vSAN and move that. Whereas in VCF, we do allow you to do that. So there's a lot of flexibility there. So using this exact same example, to your point, John, because of this entitlement and of the one TIB capacity that we're given and the needs here, I'm actually in excess of 86 TIBs just by looking at a different license type. And obviously, you get a lot more components and products and capabilities. But again, this allows you to easily run these different scenarios for our customers to understand, and also to help some of our partners and even our field and sales folks to provide some of this quoting information.
Yeah. Is there an add to cart feature? Like once you figured it out and boom, no?
I'm staying away from that. Yeah.
I was again, promised a vending machine, P&P. 9,000 SKUs. We now have like 4 or 5. Like, I mean, they all fit in a vending machine, right? So.
Yeah. Yeah. And and I had a really fun story because I actually had a customer reach out and they were actually aware of these scripts because they had found it on the blog post and they were just getting quoted by our sales folks. And so he ran in and he's like, hey, I'm roughly expecting this amount of cores for my compute. And I guess he got a quote from our team and it was off, right? And long story short, it was just simply human error mistake, right? But they were able to use a script and actually validate that, hey, this does calculate to what they're expecting. They updated a quote. And so this is something that we recommend internally, even to our field team, to be able to use as a tool so that we can quickly help customers get the value of the products. And so they can start deploying it and not, again, have to deal with math, right? And if you look at these configurations, and even this is probably a basic configuration. If you look at most enterprises, medium-sized organizations, they've got all sorts of components, multiple vCenter servers. And so to be able to do all this math and calculate it correctly, it's just a lot of time waste, right? And so I thought that we can take the goodness of what we need in the policies, codify that in scripting. I'm always a big fan of automation, simplifying things for our customers, and ultimately make it very transparent, right? We're not trying to hide anything. You can quickly see where things are at and, where you find value makes sense and the types of offers that you're looking at.
Nice. Mark Chi says, thanks for this tool. I know it wasn't only you, but helping make it available to all of us. Also said that, he uses this tool himself. Let's see. Yeah, awesome. They use it in all their accounts already. For the last couple of months. So pretty cool. Yeah. Some folks from LinkedIn saying, yeah, this is a wealth of information. Thanks for putting this together. Very cool stuff. Yeah, I like that. I think that's a really smart way to do it. And I love the idea of the inventory because sometimes you just don't know, right? You don't know. Sometimes environments can be huge. You may not really have a full understanding. And then, of course, as you even alluded to, the capacity information is different in the API than it is sometimes in the GUI. So if you're doing, not that it would be a huge difference, but if you're looking at exact numbers, that would be nice to be able to just pull that. Yeah, very
nice. And this is all just looking at calculations, right? So really just doing math, and even as much as we dislike math. But if you've got large environments, or even you've got smaller environments where you've had for quite some time, I've had some customers running this and they're like, hey, this is a 6-7 environment. Again, we have this VMware value modeling tool internally where you can take output from not only my scripts, but again, from LiveOptics, other tools. You know, there's a whole bunch of things that we can take as input. And the team can actually work with you to actually do proper sizing and help you understand what you might want to design for your systems and really help understand what you've got, right? And so if you need that extra level of insight into your infrastructure team, you know, I just recently found this out, you know, as a as an internal sort of e-learning thing, that we have this modeling tool that will help you take all this information and produce some additional insights into what you've got and maybe even some recommendations based on your goals. And so if that's something that's interested to you, reach out to your local VMware account or sales team, and they'll definitely be able to connect you up there and again take output from these different tooling and provide you further insights, and that's available to you, right? So again, something just to be aware of.
Very nice. Yeah, Lucas B says from Twitter says this is a great time saver. So yeah, William, that is good stuff, man. I appreciate you sharing the demos with us. Yeah, John and I are going to continue to do these live streams. We welcome you back anytime. But I'm actually going to be doing a live stream. This is virtually speaking, which is definitely not official VMware. So we can get away with doing whatever we want, like playing
do it live!
Sound clips of
this
William
thing's on
Lamb
fire.
Saying this thing is on fire. But yeah, on March 6th, I'm actually going to be doing a live stream on the VMware channels. So with Rick Walsworth, we're going to be doing a VMware Cloud Foundation Live. That's going to be on VMware's LinkedIn. It's going to be on the VCF YouTube channel and all that stuff. So I welcome you guys to join that as well. But yeah, William, I want to thank you, man, for joining us here on this live. I know it's hard to do things live sometimes because you never know what's going to happen. But yeah, that was really good, man. I really liked it. I appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, I appreciate Frank's environment for not upgrading. I know he's currently upgrading his environment to get ready for some of our private AI stuff. And so I'm glad he has stopped his upgrade for just for this, right? But no, thanks for having me. Really enjoyed it. And hopefully this was useful for everybody out there.
Yeah, for sure. John, anything else before we let this man go?
No, I think I've got enough automation to think on. I've actually got two new lab hosts. I bought a Ching Wang real fun device off of a recommendation of a blog post. I think a guest post of yours that I've...
Oh, last
getting
question.
Adjusted.
Does it work with the Apple Vision Pro goggles? Can I do this straight from the Vision Pro goggles?
So I think if we use the Zoom client.
You should.
Would it work? Like,
you don't even need the Zoom thing. You can, I was watching the video. Can't you take your laptop and bring it into.
Oh, yeah. You just.
Right? So.
It doesn't work when it's docked right now. It, for whatever reason, it has to be like open initially when I do it. So I'd have to pull it off the dock and put in front of me and run the cables. But no, I could do this with that.
That would be cool to see that. Actually have you record that and publish that. That'd actually be pretty cool.
And then we could do the, cause I can also inject myself as the persona avatar into a Zoom call. I've done that already. So,
You don't need to do that.
Need that part. Let's
It's creepy.
That part.
It's creepy.
Yeah, exactly.
You'll just want to see me look. Y'all just want to see me look ridiculous on a call. I got it.
Yeah. Very good, William. Thank you so much, as always, my good friend. And for the rest of those, we will be back shortly. But until then, bye for now.